Hey everyone, this is Sasha.
And Claire.
And this is
Dare to Rise.
With therapy, probably the most important thing I learned was about cognitive distortions. I'd never heard of this before, and I was actually surprised by how many cognitive distortions I actually had. For those of you who don't know what they are, they are ways our mind convinces us of something that isn't really true. And the article that my therapist gave me was an article from Dr. John M. Grohol. Apologies if I mispronounced, but the article name was 15 Common Cognitive Distortions. And she gave this to me, she had me read it through, and then in the next session, we talked about which ones I think I might have. Then we even talked about ways that I can control these cognitive distortions. And so an example from John M. Grohol, and also I'll be linking the article in the description. What he describes as an example of a cognitive distortion is a person might tell themselves, I always fail when I try to do something new. I therefore fail at everything I try. This is an example of polarized thinking, seeing everything in black or white with no gray areas. And essentially what that means is that they feel like they're always failing whenever they try something new. So it's like, oh, I tried something new, I failed. Oh, I tried something new again, I failed. Therefore, I shouldn't even try anything new because I'm just going to fail.
Like you're going to keep repeating it over and over again.
Exactly.
Your failures.
Hmm. Yeah. And I find this really interesting because there's so many different ones that exist. We can understand these and learn to identify how they impact us. We can gain control and learn how to adjust our thinking using cognitive behavioral therapy to eliminate the distortion and think more positively and be happier. I'm just going to list off a few. Filtering. Filtering is dwelling on one negative aspect while filtering out all positive ones, ending up with a darkened vision of reality. For example, throwing a party that everyone enjoyed, including myself, at the time, but then focusing only on the fact that you overcooked the main course and how that ruined the party. So it was a great party. Everyone had a good time. People probably didn't even notice that the food got overcooked.
Yeah. But it's big enough of a deal to you.
Yes.
And that's the one thing you're focusing on, the one negative thing.
Yeah, and so even though you were fine at the party, mm-hmm. afterwards you're like I ruined the party. The party was horrible, and it was all because of that. The food
one
was
chicken
ruined.
That was overcooked.
Yeah. Overgeneralization, coming to a general conclusion based on a single incident or piece of evidence, often seeing a single unpleasant event as part of a never-ending pattern of defeat. So this would be an example of someone on Facebook gives you an angry emote on your post, therefore everyone hates you and you should never post on Facebook again. So it's basically taking that like one bad incident and applying it to everyone hating you.
Yeah.
And then being like, oh, I should never do that again.
It's like blowing up, basically.
Yeah. So these are all things that I'm like, when she gave me this list of the 15 common cognitive distortions, I was like, check.
Sounds like I have a lot of those too.
And it's really interesting. And I find this fascinating that I'm not the only person that's thinking this way. Like this is like, it's like an actual problem. Mm. And so, some other examples are control fallacies. This kind of comes in like two ways. Either one, feeling extremely controlled. We are helpless victims of our fate. Or feeling internally controlled. We are responsible for the pain and happiness of everyone around us. So in the first instance of feeling externally controlled, it's almost like you're blaming others for like why that bad thing happened. So
like a victim mentality?
Kind of. So it's like, I failed the test because the teacher did not prepare us properly. So it's not because I didn't study enough. It's because
teacher
the teacher
didn't prep you.
Exactly. And then the other piece is kind of like internalizing everything, and my friend is sad, and it must be because of
Something
something I
I
did.
did. Yes,
Exactly.
I'm familiar with that one. Very
Yep.
familiar.
And one of the things that's also listed is blaming, holding other people responsible for our pain or blaming ourselves. I kind of see this as kind of like a hand in hand with controlling fallacies because it's kind of like it's very similar. It's either you are blaming other people for why you're feeling bad or you're blaming yourself. So my friend got a promotion and because of that I'm feeling bad about myself. She got a promotion and I didn't. And therefore,
I'm
it's
worthless.
her fault I'm sad.
Oh,
Because
what?
she succeeded, it made me feel bad, but it's because she succeeded, and so it's her fault, so I blame her. Or, for example, it's like you blame yourself internally, like it's my fault the branch fell on my car. I was the one who parked under the tree. It's all my fault, versus it's just, shit happens.
Yeah.
But instead, I'm internalizing it, blaming myself. It's me.
Giving it way more meaning.
Yeah. And another one is shoulds. Having a set of rules that people, including themselves, should follow, and being upset when they don't follow them. Using the term should, must, and ought often, feeling that one should be punished when not following their rules. So, I should clean the house. I shouldn't relax on the couch. I should leave the closer parking spots for the seasoned employees. So it's kind of like coming up with rules that you abide by
Apply to
and
everybody
you apply to
else.
everybody else. Like you think that everybody else should be following those rules too.
Your rules.
The rules that I made up in my head. And I just think that everybody should be following them because I think that's the way it should be.
Right.
And which is interesting because I think this pairs well with fallacy of fairness, which is believing we know what is fair and others do not. Going through life judging what is fair and not often feeling poorly because of it. So things will not always work out in our favor even when we think that they should. So I come up with these rules. For example, it's not fair that my friend's parent paid for their student loans and my parents did not. Life's not fair. And so I think my parents should have paid for my student loans. Therefore, I'm angry. I'm applying that should like in the rule from my head and the fairness that I see that other parents are paying for it and that my parents didn't. And so therefore, I'm like creating like a combination of the fallacy of fairness and the shoulds. Another one is emotional reasoning. What we feel must be true. I feel stupid, therefore I am stupid. I feel ugly, therefore I am ugly. However, I'm feeling that is what I am.
Kind of being attached to your feelings,
Yeah.
kind of like saying that you are, and so you've attached yourself to that feeling and you've made it be your reality.
It's more of what you're feeling becomes your reality. So if I feel down, if I feel sad, then that is my reality. I'm sad because I'm sad. And I will never be happy because I am sad.
Wow.
This article is really, really interesting. So I really encourage everybody to actually go through and read it because it's really got a lot of information and you'll actually go down this list and you'll be like, I have thought like that before, or you know what, I think I like that all the time. And there's some that you'll be like, oh no, that's not me, but I know somebody that thinks
Yeah,
like that.
right.
One of them, which I don't have, is always being right. Being wrong is unthinkable, and we go to any length to demonstrate our rightness, arguing until everyone believes you are right.
Ha, yes, I know someone like that.
We all know somebody like that.
And sometimes I can be like that.
Yeah, I think everyone at some point you might have like some of these thoughts
Shades
at
of it,
some point.
yeah.
But the issue is when these things are controlling your life. So for me, I had a lot of these that I felt like were controlling my life. For example, filtering. Sometimes I hate my beautiful house. It's a very beautiful house and I'm very grateful and glad to have it. But sometimes all I can focus on is our creepy unfinished basement because I have to go down there every so often to clean out the dehumidifier, and it's so troubling to me sometimes to go down there because there's spiders and I just don't do well with creepy crawlies, and so whenever I go down there it's very challenging for me. And so sometimes all I can focus on is our creepy basement, and I think, I hate our house sucks, why did we buy this? And I start going down that negative track. And what that is an example of is filtering. I'm focusing on just that one negative aspect of the house. And meanwhile, everything else about the house is very, very beautiful, and I have so much to be grateful for in this house. It's just that the basement is not what I would like it to be. And that doesn't mean that I can't change it. It's just sometimes I find myself filtering it out and thinking that I need to sell the house because the house is horrible and it's the only thing I can think of. And so at the times like that, I have to remind myself, okay, you're filtering. Focus on what are some of the good things. So I think that's a good example of how these cognitive distortions kind of go into our lives.
So for me, I've actually never heard of cognitive distortions until Sasha, till you mentioned it. I'm definitely going to read that article now because I've already checked off of just the ones that you read, I can already relate to. But yeah, I started hearing about this from you. And then I was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. A lot of what you're saying makes so much sense. And I see it, I feel it, I've done it. But it really started hitting home with me when I discovered Brené Brown's Netflix special called The Call to Courage. And in that, she explains that the human brain does not like any gray areas. And it doesn't like anything that is undefined. It likes black, white, yes, no. It likes something very sure, very, very definitive. So when there are any gray areas or gaps, what we do with our minds is that we tell ourselves these stories of what these gaps are. And these stories that we tell ourselves is usually from our, you know, our traumas, our insecurities, our fears. And she gives this awesome example too. It's like, for example, when you send like a risky text message, or you send a text message and you're looking at the text trail and you see those three dots and then you see it disappear. I mean, you can already see how your mind is working and how your brain is filling in the gaps and what that could mean and what it could implicit. And you go
like,
into this.
Oh my gosh, what were they going to say?
Uh-huh.
Oh my God, they stopped it. Oh my God, they must be so mad at me. Or I said something inappropriate. I wish I could take it back. Can I delete that text?
Yep. I was like, yep, I definitely see that. And an example for me where I used filtering was a recent event. So I'll have to say I've been going to therapy for years. I've read so many personal development books, listened to so many podcasts. So I have a lot of self-awareness about like my past, my traumas, etc. And one of my biggest disempowering beliefs is that I'm not liked, I'll be forgotten about and left behind. Which I know that came from my childhood trauma of my father walking out on us. And that resulted in a fear of abandonment, amongst other things. But definitely the main thing of that is the fear of abandonment. And a recent event that happened to me is one of my classmates from my Startup Accelerator program invited us, the whole class, to go sailing on his sailboat. And he did say in the email that it's limited seating, he can't take everybody, so your seat is on a first come, first serve basis. So I emailed him back saying, yes, I would love to be there. If there are any spots available, I'd love to join the sailing excursion. I didn't hear back. And the date was coming. And in my head, I was saying, oh my God, there isn't any space for me. I've been forgotten. He's picking out, so my brain went really crazy from there. I said that, oh, he's picking out specific people to join him, and specifically not me. So he's cherry picking the people that he wants to go on his boat, and I'm going to get left behind, and I'm not in with the crowd. And
wow.
Yeah, exactly. My brain just went there.
Yep.
Very disempowering. I realize that now. And
funny you mention that, because recently my work asked people if they were interested in getting CPR certified. And I replied to the email being like, yeah, I'm interested. And then I didn't hear anything for a very long time. And I'm like, oh, I guess I'm not allowed to. Like they're like, oh, no, you don't get to be CPR certified. And I just thought it was just one of those things. I was like, oh, oops.
I guess I'm not qualified to do CPR.
Yeah, but then they ended up making the meeting time mm-hmm. for like a later date, but it just took them a moment before they actually set everything up, probably because they had to find somebody to actually do the certification and everything. But because I didn't hear anything back right away, I was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that. maybe they're like, I'm just going to pick like a small group of people. And then I was like, well, what if I take away the opportunity for somebody to do it? Maybe maybe they're like having a problem because there's like other people that are like, oh, I really want to do it. And they're having trouble because I said that I wanted to do it. I don't know. I have lots of thoughts like that.
Yeah. So I'm just thankful for the work that I've done on myself to develop my own self-awareness, because I knew I had gone off the rails at this point. I was just, whoa, way off the deep end just because somebody didn't respond to my email. So for me, in order to combat that, first of all, I had to talk myself down. I had to remind myself that these stories that I'm telling myself are not true. There's no basis from this. And essentially, I'm just re-triggered and projecting my old wounding on this situation. So I realized, I thanked my heart for showing me that I still need to work on this issue. That because I'm still feeling very triggered and a lot of strong emotions behind this, I realized, I was like, okay, I need to work on that more. So I meditated, I did my affirmations, journaled, and I reflected, and then I talked about, okay, what's actually true about this without projecting my own wounding, my traumas, my childhood conditionings, essentially like minus the crazy, right? Just looking at it objectively, and I picked out three truths of that situation. And the truth is, he's a nice guy. He's generous to invite us on his boat on a nice day. He helped me with my pitch. You, Sasha, helped me, and him too. Like, you both like really helped me so much for my graduation.
And he wouldn't have invited you if he didn't want you there. He didn't have to extend the invitation. If he only wanted certain people there, he could have just invited those people.
So, you know, and another truth of this is the space was limited, and he did say that. So, fact of the matter is, some people are going to get left out, and that's just the fact, and I shouldn't take it personally. Yeah.
And he just didn't respond, so maybe he didn't have a chance to check his email. Maybe, mm-hmm. like, it doesn't mean that it was a no. It's just he just didn't respond yet.
That's right. And that was my other truth. My last truth is that he is running a company. He's the founder and CEO of his company, and he's a very busy man. I know I can get really busy sometimes too. We both have a startup company. It's busy. And unfortunately, some things get left behind. Sometimes emails get left unanswered, and that's just all it was.
Yeah.
And then I texted him once I calmed myself down, picked out my truths. And then he actually responded back, because I know he texts right away. He responded back right away saying, "Oh, I'm looking forward to having you out on my sailboat. I am working on sending out an email to the group about the details."
See?
All's well that ends well.
One of the cognitive distortions is called jumping to conclusions.
Mm.
These people are mind readers and know what others are feeling and why others are acting the way that they do.
Mm-hmm.
So that really sounded like jumping to conclusions.
You know what? Yes. That's one of my main things, one of my cognitive distortions, I would say.
Yeah, an example, knowing someone has a grudge against you but never taking action to see if that's even true. So these cognitive distortions, it's amazing how easily you can have them, because it's just the way that you think. And it's not necessarily bad. Some of these things, like there's one where it's like you're minimizing or maximizing a certain thing. Like instead of like you could either like take like some small thing and make it big deal out of it, or you could take a big thing and make a small deal out of it. So like some things, like for example, you could be just being humble, where you're taking like a big thing, and you're like, oh no, it's not that big of a deal. Where that's fine, but when you're doing it out of like something that's like not good, then it's a problem. And that, like, when it's like negative thinking and doing negative things because of that negative thinking, that's when it becomes a problem, and that's when you need to take action.
Mm.
So,
like, what's like not a good thing? Like, that's a huge thing that you're minimizing, like cancer or something.
Could be cancer. It could be like a lot of people who are in abusive relationships.
Yes.
Someone, my husband punched me. Oh, it's not a big deal.
It
was an accident. Like,
yeah.
it's not a big deal at all.
Oh,
you know, that's an
okay.
example of something that's like a negative aspect, where like you're minimizing something, but it's actually something that is a big deal.
Right.
But it could go the other way, where you're taking something really small, like, oh, I stubbed my toe and now I'm going to die. You know, that's extreme, but
yeah.
That's an example. Like, oh, you like something like really small becomes something
like
really, really big.
Molehills into mountains.
Yeah.
Like that saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think it was interesting how you talked about how you combated that cognitive distortion you were having. Because what my therapist actually did, she gave me this spreadsheet, which I don't, like, probably scanning this in, because it's already a scanned the image. So I could probably, I'll put it into like a Google Sheet, and so you guys can see it. But basically what it is every time that I had an instance where like my thoughts got out of control, I was thinking all these negative thoughts, my therapist had me sit down and write down everything I was thinking, everything I was feeling, whatever was going on in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Then after it, this spreadsheet has 6 columns, and I would have to fill out this spreadsheet. So the first one is, what was the trigger situation? What happened? What caused this to happen? And it could be that, like, afterwards, after I had a chance to think about it, it's, oh, you know, I was actually really hungry. I was like hangry, and that's just why that's happened. Because
that, yeah,
sometimes
that
happens.
Of course.
Yeah, it's a valid thing. Like, blood sugar plays a real big impact in people's lives.
Sleep,
being tired, or is it something like I got mad because the dishes weren't done, or I got mad because my wife snipped at me, and I just made it a big deal. So it's like identifying that trigger situation. What happened that caused this spiral?
Yeah.
Then what are your feelings? And you can have multiple feelings, and you can like list them out, and you can address each of them separately. So I could be like, I'm angry, I'm sad, I hate myself, like whatever you're feeling, you write that down. Then you write down the automatic thoughts. What were the automatic thoughts that I had associated to this feeling? And then you write down evidence that supports these thoughts. So for example, something I might have said was, like an automatic thought I had was, I am a horrible person. And then I would have to find evidence that supported that thought. Oftentimes, I could not find evidence that supported my thoughts.
Yes.
It was just, sometimes it'd be like, you know, I'm a horrible person because I yelled at my wife. You know, and the evidence, if you do have evidence, there are things that you can do to change that. And then the next step was finding evidence that contradicts what you thought,
mm-hmm.
which is what you did.
Yeah.
And so that would be like in your instance.
The three truths.
Yeah, your three truths.
Yeah. About the situation minus the feelings and the emotion and the trigger.
Yes.
Yeah.
After you do all that, you identify the cognitive distortion that's associated to your automatic thoughts. And what that allows you to do, it allows you to analyze your thoughts and each situation and how you got to those thoughts. So that way you can say, so I notice a pattern that anytime I'm hungry, this is what's happening. So I need to make sure that I am having a snack every so often to make sure that I am not
hangry
and going down this negative thought pattern. Yeah. And it's just things like that. And then you can be like, oh, whenever I feel this way, these are the thoughts I have. Or, you know what? I'm noticing that I'm having the cognitive distortion of filtering or jumping to conclusions or whatever. And it's all of these things combined together that when you're analyzing it and looking at it and actually seeing what you wrote down, like sometimes I felt embarrassed by what I wrote down because I'm like, I really know that's not true. But it's just once your thoughts run away from you, it just... they run away and you can't control them sometimes. But by doing this, I started to recognize the next time that happened or the next time I started having those thoughts, I'd be like, oh, you know what? I'm filtering again. I really need to focus on combating that. And so I'll be like, oh, I'm filtering. Let's think of the positives. Let's take a step back. Let's find the contradictory evidence and let's prove myself wrong. And then I would feel better and I'd be able to move on faster.
Kind of interesting where you said you were embarrassed by some of the things that you wrote down. It just shows you how powerful our emotions are. And when you take your emotions and you take your thoughts and you run away with it, it's so powerful. It's so irrational too.
Yeah.
I like that process of slowing yourself down. Definitely. For me, like, I didn't know, like, that spreadsheet would have helped me and would have saved years of therapy. But, like, just that would have, like, helped me not, like, sabotage myself, my relationships, the people around me. Because at that time, back then, I was so unaware. I was so self-unaware of why I was behaving and thinking and saying these things.
And the thing is that psychology is always evolving. So this might not have been something that was common in therapy years ago, and it might be something that's more common now. Or maybe the therapist that I saw was one that had a background in cognitive behavioral therapy, which is where this stems from. And each therapist kind of has their own specialty, and I'm very grateful for the tools that my therapist gave me through this cognitive behavioral therapy, because this really allows you to change your thought patterns.
Yeah. And once you change your thoughts, you change your world.
Yeah.
You really do.
Instead of saying, I am bad, saying, I am good. You change it to a positive affirmation, and you'll eventually just automatically think, oh, I'm good, I'm awesome, I got this.
Yeah.
Instead of thinking all that negative stuff. If you practice and if you analyze your thoughts and you take active action to think differently, then it'll become natural.
Yeah.
Eventually.
You essentially change your neural connections in your brain. You're changing your brain. And again, once you do that.
Yeah, and the thing is it doesn't mean that it's going to resolve it forever, because I still have times where I experience this cognitive thinking. I mean, I had a really tough time this week, and I noticed myself getting into some of these patterns again. And it's been a while since I actually sat down and wrote my thoughts, and I really should have done that at this time. But I do know that after I have done this, the way that I think is much, much different. And I often will be like, okay, I realize I'm starting to go down a negative spiral. I need to stop myself and change my thoughts. And so sometimes that can manifest in different ways. Sometimes it's like, oh, I'm really angry because of this particular incident, and I really hate that person, and blah, 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 because of whatever they did. And I have to be like, wait a minute. I need to stop myself and either change to think about something completely different and get away from even thinking about that, or finding those contradictory evidence that proves my thoughts wrong.
Yeah, and like we've mentioned before in the past, that working on yourself is just a never-ending thing. And that's not to dissuade people from doing this work. It's just to give yourself that space and that time and forgiving yourself and allowing for mistakes. But the key is to recognize it, and then you can start to, you're not going right back to square one, you're going to step five, and then with each time you recognize it, you slide back and forth, but it's the key is to get right back on.
And you have to remember that you're always going to be working on yourself because you're alive. You're always living. You're always changing. Your situations, your everything around you changes
Changes.
constantly. And you're going to be around for a long time, so you need to focus on yourself and make those changes, because it comes back to some of the things that we talked about in the past about how you can't help other people if your cup is empty. Like you need to fill up your cup before you can actually help other people. A good dare for this week is to read the article in our description from Dr. John M. Grohol and figure out if you have any of these cognitive distortions, and then come up with a plan to combat it. And again, this is just one way of handling the situation. We aren't therapists. We're not telling you like this is going to solve all your problems. And if this is too much for you, like if you're reading this list and you're like, oh my God, I have all of these, this is too much, we don't want that. If you're feeling like that, reach out to somebody and get help. Somebody can help you sort through this and help you with your thought process. We are huge advocates for therapy. We have both been in therapy throughout the years, and we feel that it is very, very helpful. So if you feel like you can't do this on your own, that's okay. It's okay to seek help.
And in addition to us not being therapists, we're also not experts. We're sharing our experience, we're sharing what we did and what we found helpful with the hopes that it might help somebody out. And we're here for you too. Reach out to all of our socials. We'll leave everything in the links below.
Yeah, we also have our email down there, so if you want something just super private, then feel free to
Join our
email us.
Facebook group too.
And we look forward to hearing from you guys. Talk to you guys in the next episode.
Just remember, fear is a four-letter word that can stand for
forget everything and run, or face everything and rise.
We dare you to rise.